episode 44. My name is Dave Hunt, and I'm joined by Michael Swick.
How is it going, Dave? I feel like it's been a while, but it hasn't. It's only been a week. I feel like we both have had long weeks.
Yeah.
So this feels like that.
Long weeks, personal and public stuff that's been going on. Like, I don't know how many other people are going to pass away this week that had some kind of influence on me, whether it was as an actor or as a sports world. Like,
yeah, no, it's anytime that happens, it always seems like it happens in bunches.
Yeah. I mean, so. Lute Olson, Chadwick.
Boseman.
Boseman. And then John Thompson passed away today.
Yeah, that was today. Yep.
Yeah. Like, so it's just crazy. But so we are Digital Days Gaming. We are a weekly podcast that posts on our podcast feed every Thursday morning at 6 a.m. We're also live on Twitch most Monday evenings, twitch.tv/digitaldaysgaming, as well as post the show on YouTube. We've been doing a much better job of getting the show posted to YouTube. So right now you just have to search Digital Days Gaming on YouTube. Unless like 19 more of you subscribe, then we'll have our own URL. So the subscriber base has been growing. That Turtle Beach unboxing video is like done really, really well, surprisingly. Kind of motivated me a little bit more.
yeah, it's been doing pretty well. And yeah. Just like the Twitch viewers, you get the raw, unedited version of the podcast, technical difficulties and all.
Yeah, if we mess up, you guys get the polished version that my wife cleans up for the podcast feeds. But if you want to see how, watch me unplug my headphones randomly and tell Michael I can't hear him anymore, you can do that on Twitch.
And then kind of blame me and then realize, nope, it's me. It's online. Yep. So, yeah, it's favorite parts. Because usually it's me.
Yeah.
Every once in a while it's Dave. Yeah. And then
9 out of 10 times it's Michael. So when I blame it on, and I used to be the one with all the technical problems, but now I just put everything on its own individual monitor on its own separate PC and it just works. Now, granted, I have like 14 screens in front of me, but
yeah, I went with efficiency with my setup. You went with like, okay, if I could just have every machine I have in my house running
apart
in this process.
Remember, I'm the guy that hit spacebar on my MacBook that one day when we were recording an E3 episode.
Oh yeah, I remember that. There was a little bit of panic that morning. We're like, we gotta go, but. Remember E3s? Those are fun.
So we have some news, obviously, but like I said before, all the links and stuff that we've been talking about, you can just catch them on the show notes below. So you can just on your app, just click on the notes, and there'll be a bunch of links there to Facebook, Twitter, all those things, and you can just follow us there, and that'd be appreciated. As well as just, joining Discord. And if you want to donate to us directly, you can donate to us on PayPal or you can join Patreon. So I'm a little babbled right now, which is not common. So I'm going to just move it right over to the news before I fumble more. So.
All right. Yeah. Let me save you a little bit. So Gamescom happened this past weekend. I think it was technically the whole weekend, but there was only really announcements on the first day with Jeff Keighley's opening night live. I really liked the way this was presented. It was also advertised to not have any major announcements, which is very important because not much happened during opening night live. I like marked some of the highlights, which include the Black Ops Cold War trailer, which it's controversial on its own if you go look at articles, because it's basically like, let's do war crimes, which is less like, that's just how the Call of Duty games have been, so nothing crazy there. There was Dragon Age and BioWare were there to say, hey, we still exist, please don't forget about us, we are still a studio and we still have this franchise called Dragon Age. Anthem did not kill us. And that was basically their whole thing, and it was just, hey, here's concept art, here's like some of the voice actors, and that was kind of it. It was enough to get the Dragon Age fans excited. I know Sarah and me were just waiting for the YouTubers to like break down the images, and there's like a whole 20 minute videos already on just like 5 screenshots.
Right.
The indie game, even though I don't know if it's an indie game anymore, 12 Minutes, which has been around forever, announced that their cast will include Daisy Ridley, James McAvoy, and Willem Dafoe, which is pretty cool. It's like top-down, takes place in a single room, or an apartment, and you have like 12 minutes to change like the fate of lives of the characters.
I remember this one. Yeah.
Yeah. This has been around forever in terms of like at PAXs, at E3s for like several years. So it looks like it's getting closer.
Devolver game?
No, no. It's Annapurna, which might as well be a Devolver, you know, like company. And then the biggest thing is the Ratchet and Clank gameplay from that. We got, I think it's like 7 minutes of actual real gameplay of Ratchet and Clank. Dave, I'm assuming you checked this out because it was kind of hard to miss it.
Actually, I missed it.
Oh, you missed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I saw some people talk about it and I was like, oh, I need to watch that. And then I forgot. So.
Okay. Yeah. Nothing crazy here. This does look like a game that needs to be next gen with some of the stuff they're doing. I feel like visually it got kind of knocked down a little bit from that first reveal for it.
Shocking.
Yeah, but at least they're doing it now instead of just waiting for the game to come out. I just noticed some lack of detail or like some particle effects that were there originally that in gameplay are just not really existent. But the game still looked good. It looks like it requires next-gen hardware, but it also still looks like a Ratchet and Clank game, so that's a good thing. It's not like doing anything dramatically different.
Well, I think that the stuff that we've been seeing, so for the most part with Ratchet and Clank, it's just going to be the number of things on the screen and then the fast-paced movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did see some stuff like afterwards, and I kept meaning to go back and watch what they showed, but they were talking about something we've been curious about is it appears that this game's going to have like a resolution selection mode to where you can do like 30 frames per second, 4K, and then, you know, 60 frames and 1080. Like, so there's certain things that it can and can't do.
Yeah, which is kind of a bummer that the first set of games coming out on this new powerful hardware can't even do the stuff that they were kind of promising.
Well, believe it or not, I'm kind of okay with it because, like, most people know already, too. Like, I don't have a monitor, like a 4K monitor. So, like, what's the point of me playing a game in 4K?
Yeah, they've been touting that they're capable of doing 4K 60 frames per second. And a game that's coming out launch window, which they confirmed launch window, but that window, depending on which company's window that is, could be anywhere from, like, a month to 6 months. It's a little bit of a bummer to be like, hey, you have to pick or choose, you know, like max resolution or max frame rate, which Ratchet and Clank at 30 frames I'm fine with. I'll probably do that just so I can get it to look prettier at 30 frames, because it's not a first person shooter, so I don't think that's a big deal. Most third person games are going to be 30 frames typically.
And I think the only way that you really notice the frames is if you immediately hop from a game that was like higher than 60 frames and went to this. But I mean, it's not like, you know, when I jump back and forth on Destiny on console to PC, I can see it and feel it. And if for me, it's not even always the frames, it's some of the other settings in a first person game, like you've talked about, like field of view. So for a third person game, I agree with you. I don't think it's as important as you'll play the game. As you're progressing through it, you know, you're playing in an hour, half an hour, you know, even 3 or 4 hour chunks, like you're going to adjust and then you'll be fine. And then when you go to play something else, you'll just adjust to that and then you'll go back to Ratchet and Clank. I think it's when you play the same game or when you're playing a game and you see the frame rate decline is when you can actually see it. So in terms of frame rate isn't super important to me as much as a consistent locked frame rate is important.
Which, hopefully, in the 60 frame mode, it can consistently stay at 60 frames. Because if it has issues with 60 frames, then that is going to be a major like issue for the PlayStation going forward. If your launch game can't stay consistent,
and I agree with you, it's not something that they want. You know, like if this game comes out at launch, like with the console, there will be people that have it earlier, and they will. You know, they will have reviews for it more than likely on launch day of the console, and it could be a vivid point of contention if it doesn't hold a consistent 60 frames per second. Like, are we really a next gen and we can't even hold 60 frames? Like, because somebody like Digital Foundry is going to put this game through the ringer.
Yes, and, as they should.
Yeah.
And that's especially with, we still live in a world where fanboys are out there going crazy. So you don't want to give any fuel to the fanboy fire of having a game that can't consistently hit 60 frames mm-hmm. on your brand new hardware that is going to cost mystery amount of money.
Yeah,
a lot of mystery amount of money for that. But yeah, that was kind of it for Gamescom opening night live. They told us that it wasn't going to be a big deal.
Gamescom
wasn't going to be anything major.
Gamescom has never been like a huge, I don't feel like it's ever been a huge news breaking. It's always like post E3 and they're like, hey, you remember the thing you saw at E3? Well, now you can play it. Or it's the more of the open to the public and it's kind of just more of a repeat. You know, they might have some kind of update, but it's
every
more or less,
once in a while.
Yeah.
There's something big. I think it was big when the new PS4 and Xbox One were coming out. They definitely had like that time because there was that year that Sony hit like Gamescom, Paris Games Week, you know, E3, and they were all big announcements for that year. So I think maybe people were holding out hope for that.
But they had a date and a price at that time.
Yes, and they have none of that. It is August 31st when we're recording this. We still have nothing. But did you sign up for the special fancy list to maybe hopefully get a copy?
Sure.
Or a system?
I did.
Oh, man. Hopefully we're enough.
Did I sign up for a possible pre-order of a pre-order? Sure.
Yes, yeah, you did. Yeah, but they have to look at your trophy list and are like, did he finish enough of our first party games to deserve this console? How many platinums does it acquire?
Not enough.
All right, and then moving on to other stories. This one I put in just because I'm a fan of the games the studio's made, but it turns out Lab Zero, makers of Skullgirls and Indivisible, they're pretty much no more. So it turns out the founder, Mike Z, has been like a lightning rod for controversy at that studio. A couple months ago when there was the second wave of Me Too stuff into video games, he popped up, but it kind of came and went, the stuff that he popped up for. But then shortly after that, a bunch of like sexist and racist stuff started to come out of the studio. And this led to a internal review that then led to nothing. And in terms of like action, because like the dude was totally doing stuff he shouldn't have been doing, but no action happened from that. And this just led this week to a bunch of animators and people that work at the studio to just leave. And this then pulled Autumn Games and Hidden Variable Studio, who turns out actually own the Skullgirls IP, which I don't think anyone really knew that they actually owned it and not Lab Zero. They basically took the IP from Lab Zero and said, we're no longer working with Lab Zero, and we are going to take control over this franchise. And basically, Skullgirls will live on, Lab Zero will go away, though Lab Zero isn't really a thing anymore after everyone left. So Skullgirls will live on, and there's actually DLC coming for it next year.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just another one of those stories where, you know, people took the action into their own hands. Like, I'm really happy that the very talented people at that studio left because they couldn't deal with the work conditions of, like, the founder of the studio. And hopefully they go on and do some great things. Like, there's some really talented, like, artists and animators, especially mm-hmm. the Skullgirls franchise is always known for its beautiful artwork. Indivisible, same thing. So hopefully those talented people can maybe move over to the publisher, you know, and maybe continue to work on Skullgirls, or they can find work elsewhere.
Yeah. If I'm the publisher for Skullgirls, and these people have already been working and shading and animating our game for this long, and then now all of a sudden they just left because they're unhappy, like, I would definitely reach out to them because it would just make their job publishing the game easier.
Yeah, in terms of, especially if they're going to plan to release DLC next year, it would just make sense to just like, hey, come here, make a new studio, and then go from there. I put the new story in there just because I was just kind of surprised that, like, I always associated Lab Zero with Skullgirls, so I assumed they owned it. Mm-hmm. To find out they actually didn't own it was really good news for once, finding out a developer doesn't own.
Yeah, the IP world is fascinating. Like,
yeah.
who owns what and how they own it and what exactly they own within that intellectual property is just it's always intriguing. Like, even like we've talked about, like the Spider-Man and the X-Men worlds, like of who owns what character and you know, like that stuff. There's so much deeper stuff that's in there that a lot of people don't understand. And then they're always kind of like surprised, like, oh, well, this studio's gone. Like I, not that it would ever happen to them. Oh, 343's gone, so Halo's over. Like, no.
Yeah. I'm always, especially when you get later on into like a franchise's life cycle or when they try and revive a franchise, and there's always like, okay, where Windjammers had like the famous one to where before that was re-released, there was Crash, where it's like, okay, Vivendi owned it because they got it from Universal, and then Activision got it. It's just
THQ probably owned it somewhere in there.
Probably. I feel like they probably published a couple of the Crash games. So that is like some good news in terms of like Skullgirls will live on, and hopefully those animators and everyone will find new jobs. All right, this story. I am so excited for this story. This story, when I saw it, I immediately posted it in our Facebook group because I wanted to know if everyone was excited to hear Dave's reaction to.
And I stayed quiet on purpose.
Yes, thank you. Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War was announced officially last week. They had a Warzone in-game announcement, trailers that we just talked about. But they also announced their release plans for it. And there are 10 different versions of Cold War for you to purchase. And Activision had to put a whole website, you know, on their support website of what it means if you want to play this game on this generation and next generation consoles. And man, it's kind of hilarious. So for the most part,
buy digital.
Sounds like buy digital, because you can upgrade for $10 to, if you buy digital on PS4 and Xbox One, you can upgrade for $10 to the next generation. Or you can spend $70 on the next-gen one, which will work on both platforms. And then if you buy physical, you can buy it physically on a PS4 and spend $10 to upgrade it. But you have to make sure you have a PS5 with a disk drive, because there's no way for you to do it because you need the disk to authenticate that you bought the game. So there's that caveat. The weirdest one, which I thought was the craziest one, if you buy the disc version of Cold War on the Xbox One, you cannot upgrade it to the next gen version. Though, if you buy the Xbox Series X version of this game, you can use that one on your Xbox One, that disc on the Xbox One. Very confusing. I probably didn't do a good enough job explaining it. So, check it out. It's kind of crazy.
Let me ask you this. So who do you think is putting this in place or putting the barrier up for this? So
Activision.
PlayStation is Activision. So why is Activision letting PlayStation subscribers, PlayStation owners upgrade for $10?
I think it is Microsoft wants you to do the smart delivery thing, which doesn't change the price of anything like that. And PlayStation seems like they don't care. It's like, hey, you could do smart delivery or whatever it would be. It's up to you. Or you can charge whatever. We don't care. As long as your game's on our platform, do what you want with it. And I think Activision wanted to charge extra money, and they couldn't do that on Xbox because of smart delivery. So they're like, okay, let's just do it this way, which is just kind of overly complicated because there's so many different versions of this game you can buy. And I was mostly talking about the digital standard edition, because there's the cross-gen bundle, which is $10 more, and the ultimate edition that costs $90. It comes with all the digital goods. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things. I think it's Activision wanting to see...
It's Activision being Activision.
Yes.
And it's the first non-consumer thing that people have been able to point at Xbox for. Quote-unquote non-consumer thing, and I don't even think it's Xbox's fault.
I don't either.
And Sony allowing the $10 upgrade and Microsoft not, also leads me to believe that there will be some type of upgrade cost system for most PS4 games to PS5, which leads me to believe my own opinion that Ghost of Tsushima and Last of Us 2 will cost you more money to play them on PS5 if you already own them on PS4.
Because other than backwards compatibility.
We know that
PS5 version with the extra bells and whistles, yes, that would come. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Backwards compatibility will still work, obviously, but
correct.
Enhanced edition.
Not if you buy a discless one, though.
Then you're screwed. Yeah.
Unless you bought it digitally, and they still haven't said if the digital games are gonna how the digital games are gonna work on PS5.
No, they haven't.
2 months, people. 2 months. So again, in comparison, you can criticize smart delivery all you want, but at least Microsoft has named it and has explained how it will or won't work and what's going on with it. And they've said Halo will work on current gen and next gen. Cyberpunk will work on current gen and next gen, which meant that CD Projekt Red went with whatever Xbox strategy they had. Activision is not. So I think dinging Xbox for this, for their marketing, is terrible. I think it's uneducated and you're not understanding how the business is working. I think that having 10 different versions of your game is retarded and asinine, and nothing but consumer confusion, because we've always talked about, you know, mom and dad, or, you know, uncles and aunts and grandma and grandpa are buying Christmas gifts, and, oh, what are we getting Jimmy for Christmas? Oh, he wants the new Call of Duty game, and they go to the store and there's 4 different cases? Like, why?
Yeah, and the weird thing about it is the disc version is the only version that is having this issue on the Xbox One. Because you can still upgrade digitally for $10, but it's just, I almost wonder if it comes down to like some weird logistical thing with Xbox, to where like you can only have the smart delivery label on the box. You can't have any other markings on the box that says for $10 you can upgrade. Mm-hmm. And that was a breaking point, because it just seems so weird that like Xbox is, you know, is allowing that.
Well, I think it's because they don't want to. They don't want to change their box, because their games are going to work on both systems. We've already seen like leaked box art for PS5. It looks completely different than the box art for PS4. Do you know why?
Yeah.
Because it won't work.
Yeah.
You're going to go to the store and you're going to have to look in the PS4 section and the PS5 section, or you're just going to look in the Xbox section.
Yeah. And I guess the labels will be different, and they didn't want.
But this means that there's going to be 2 different boxes for Call of Duty Cold War for Xbox One and Series X. 2 separate boxes.
Yes, yeah, two separate boxes.
If you buy a disc. So yeah, like, I'm all for, I mean, obviously the name of this podcast and the name of this community is Digital Days. I'm all for the digital, you know, forefront and the landscape of it. This is encouraging it, but I also want to see the reduction. I want to see the reward for buying digital. Everybody's like, oh, cut out the middleman. Like, you're not really cutting out the middleman. You're giving the main man more money.
Yeah. You're it's more convenient if that's what like they mean by cut out the middleman. But yeah, you're just the developer and then the console manufacturer. That's your middleman. So
yeah, you would think in theory, with less movement, less production, that you would get rewarded for buying something digitally. And I think I'm going to be pissed off too when I see the prices of the digital PS5 and the physical PS5, because I don't. Yeah. The longer this stays quiet, the more I think this price is higher than we want it to be. Which means, and I also think it means that the price gap between the discless and the disc version of the consoles is small enough not to warrant it.
Yeah, like it, I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out to be like a very,
like, I'm gonna say like $25.
No, I think 50. I think 50 would probably be the minimum difference that we will see, just because it looks better. Because you work retail, you know how companies think. Like, they know 99 and 49 look good.
Yeah, I get that. But if I'm a retailer as well, and you want me to sell a cheaper version of something that's going to stop them from coming to my store, I'm not ordering as many of them.
Oh, yeah. That ratio is going to be super weird, unless the console manufacturers. Yeah, exactly. They take it into their own hands.
You got to order a 1-to-1 ratio, or you don't get anything.
Or you can only order.
They do.
Yeah. Or you can only get the disc one on our website through our raffle pre-orders type of stuff would be hilarious. That's going to be curious, or that's going to be interesting for me, is to see how, because the Sony website, the PlayStation store, whatever you want to call it, the physical store that they have online, physical goods store, that really didn't exist until like halfway through this generation. So I wonder how important that role is going to play in terms of just distributing it directly to people.
Sony's been known to fight with Amazon.
Yeah, well, everyone except Microsoft, I think, has had a problem with Amazon. But yeah, Sony
but to the point where
you
couldn't get physical stuff, you couldn't get physical versions of games on Amazon. And then the stuff that we've been seeing the last couple of months, and it, you know, maybe it's COVID, like I don't know, but like Ghost deliveries have been delayed. You know, like Last of Us deliveries were delayed to where I was almost, I don't remember which one. I think it was Last of Us. I had ordered it physically, and then I found out I'm not going to get it on launch. I'm like, nope, I'm just going to buy it digitally. Like, I canceled the pre-order.
That hit me twice this week. Tony, my collector's edition for Tony Hawk got delayed, even though it comes out Friday. And then my Avengers copy got delayed, which luckily reminded me to cancel my Avengers pre-order. But like both of those were like, hey, you're not getting a release date, and we don't know when you're going to get it. So I was just like, cancel. And then I am debating canceling and losing my collector's edition for Tony Hawk because I want that right away. But yeah. Yeah, this is just kind of this is the first time that we've seen someone say outright no to smart delivery. You know, like Madden kind of said no, but they're basically doing smart delivery, but it has a time frame on it. And this, I think 2K also pretty much said no. Like they have the crazy, like you have to buy the $100 bundle if you want to play on both consoles. So we're starting to see a little bit more confusion. This definitely was the type of news, though, that made me, like, kind of get even less excited for next-gen consoles. You know, as we keep going, I'm getting less and less interested about next-gen consoles just because I don't like where the messaging's going, and it's just like, you know what won't give me an issue? If I just buy a PS4 copy of Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. You know, like...
Or if I just buy the digital version. And, like, and then I also wonder, like, so here's the huge caveat, okay? So you're an Xbox player. You're the Xbox guy that plays Call of Duty every year. Totally fine. Will an Xbox Series X disc version of the game be available at launch if the console's not out?
No, but I feel...
So then you're going to force my hand. If I buy disc, it's like November 11th or something like that.
13th.
Like 13th. Do you think the consoles are going to be out by November 13th?
I think they'll be out that week, I think. So
here's Thanksgiving, here's my thing,
November 26th. It'll be out before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Both consoles.
So, but I'm thinking more like the 17th, like that Thursday or Friday before the week before Thanksgiving.
Then you just hold the copies of the game till
that
launch.
But you're punishing your player base that wants to play the game at like, so if I know I'm buying a Series X and I want a disc copy of the game for Call of Duty, at launch, I can't play.
Yeah, you can't play unless you buy it on a PS4 or Xbox One.
No, but
and
if
then
you buy,
they
if
put
you buy
the pop up that
I'm
says
saying,
hey,
if
for
I buy
$10.
If I buy a disc version of Call of Duty on Xbox One, it will not work on Series X, correct?
The disc will work, but you will get no benefits of the next gen.
So then let me buy the Series X version if the Series X isn't out. They need to put it on the shelf. Let me buy it. Cause it'll work on my one, right?
Which is weird. Yeah, it'll work on your one, which is just confusing.
So it'll work
on
the Xbox One. But because like and the only saving grace is for this is for some reason, and they do, like Activision knows when the consoles are coming out. I'm confident that these publishers know when these consoles are coming out. So it's going to be really close. Like it could be day and date, and that's why they're doing this stuff. So we could see, because that's is it a Friday or a Tuesday? Because I feel like consoles come out on Fridays. Okay,
they do, and that Call of Duty comes out on a Friday. That's
why
I think,
which is weird, because it's always been Election Day.
Yes,
Call of Duty's always been Election Day.
Yeah, a good chunk of them have probably been Election Day, but
Tuesday
is
the first Tuesday of the month. You know, like.
This might be a good election to not release a game on.
No, but I'm just saying, like, now all of a sudden it's like Call of Duty's delayed 10 days. Like, that's a little weird. mm-hmm. roughly 10 days. Now, I'm not saying it's delayed, but, you know, if you go back and look at all the other histories of when Call of Duty releases, it's usually like between November 3rd and November 7th. So it's just fascinating, like, to see this stuff and for them to put this kind of messaging out there. And how much easier would this messaging be for Activision if the damn dates were out there for the consoles?
Probably very helpful. So what I'm thinking, you're going to have consoles, they're going to release either the same week, Tuesday, Friday, or they're going to release two different Fridays. It's going to be like November 6th and November 13th. Which console will pick which day? I have no idea. Ideally, I think Microsoft probably has an idea of when PlayStation's going to release. Like, they're big corporations, they have all this stuff, they probably have inside information in terms of the stores. So what I'm thinking is, November 6th, the PS5 comes out. And then November 13th, just to avoid the confusion you're talking about, is when the Xbox Series X comes out. They come out a week after the PlayStation 5, so then there is no confusion. Call of Duty's out that day, the console's out that day, and then they can use... I feel like Call of Duty releasing that Friday is now going to be a point where each console manufacturer would love to get that day, because it's a Call of Duty game. There's going to be a lot of people in the stores. Yeah, and whoever can get their console to come out that day will ideally get some sort of boost from that foot traffic, though I don't know how much foot traffic we'll have this November.
It's super interesting. And what I also, that just came into my head too, that I find fascinating right now, is that, you know, retailers are buying, that have purchased these consoles. These purchase orders have already been written, and I'm surprised that somebody at, whether it's GameStop, Target, Best Buy, Walmart, anywhere, hasn't tripped upon this SKU in their system yet. These, like, it's fascinating to me, like, what they're doing, and unless, like, they've built in so much protection for all these other retailers, and they're calling it something else that, you know, like,
yeah, that's
not
what I'm thinking.
They're not catching,
name.
Yeah, and you know, but like yeah, the technology is better than it was 10 years ago. But you know, like selling shoes, as long as I sold gym shoes, it would always say, the release date would be in the SKU. It would say the SKU number, blah, 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 colon, August 28th, Jordan Retro 4. You know, it was always in the description, the date, so that the employees couldn't be like, oh, I didn't know it wasn't coming out. Like, dude, it's on the...
I'm guessing the release date isn't fully final yet, and they just probably told the retailers, like, we'll release it for November. And then there, because ideally retail, you don't have to like overwork too hard in terms of like a big system's going to launch. You don't need like 2 months.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a drop shipment. They're not going to let these things sit in stores for 4 and 6 weeks. Like, that's just suicide.
Yeah. I think the PS4, when I worked at Target, I think we had it like maybe 3 days before they launched. I think the only one that we had for a while, and by a while, I mean like a week, was like the Wii U. Like, that was the only one that we had for like a good week. It was in the back. But like, yeah, the Xbox One and the PS4, those totally were like 3 days difference between from when we got them and when we sold them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm guessing release date's not final, but November, I mean, Microsoft already said November. Because of this weird physical disc thing, I'm thinking they're going to be November 13th, and then maybe PlayStation does the 6th or the 20th, a week before Black Friday, but I feel like that close to Black Friday is when you'll probably get into the weird thing where people might hold back on buying it in hopes that there's a Black Friday deal, as people tend to do. Like, no.
Yeah, you know, I get it.
But you know, working retail, how many people will be like, is this going to be sale Black Friday? And you're like, I have no idea. And they're like, I'll wait. And it's like, okay, cool.
Even your whole store is going to be on sale. Yeah, it'll be excluding this console.
Yeah, this brand new thing won't be on sale. I guarantee it. Like, I'll wait. It's like, oh, okay. I'm thinking November 6th, November 13th.
So that's fine. I mean, that's a good spot. Between the 6th and the 13th is ideal. It's going to release on a Friday. Like, these consoles aren't going to come out on Tuesdays. Like, that's just not, they don't do that no more. So,
All right. So, next story. this one's kind of going crazy today. Ubisoft released a support page that mentioned all the backwards compatibility stuff for the Xbox, which is like all of their consoles are you can play all the games from all their consoles on the Xbox Series X. And then for the PlayStation 5, they said backwards compatibility will be available for supported PlayStation 4 titles, but will not be possible for PlayStation 3, PlayStation 2, and PlayStation games. So Ubisoft is saying there will be no extra, or there will be no backwards compatibility outside of the PS4 for the PS5, which is not crazy shocking. I think we were all, not all of us, Dave didn't care, but I think people were holding out hopes because of the weird Mark Cerny GDC press conference for... where it was so vague and poorly messaged, people were really expecting.
First of all, there's no cell processor in the PS5, so PS3 is out automatically.
Yeah, unless they did some extra work to it.
And their emulation has been garbage. So, this coming, and again, like I said before, it's as much as like maybe Sony's been perceived to be the anti-consumer developer right now, or you know, console manufacturer, this again I feel like paints a bad picture of, okay, well, you just happen to own a PS1 or PS2 disc, so you get to play your game, but you don't, and you didn't hold on to your disc for like 12 years, so you you don't get to play. And I think that paints a bad image of like, yeah, cool that you saved your games because you don't know how to get rid of stuff, like, oh, well, kudos.
But I don't think people that didn't save their games would give a shit that someone else can play their old games. So I don't feel like that is actual, like, bad look for the consumer.
Okay, but the difference between the two manufacturers of the backwards compatibility is Xbox actually up-reses your game.
It up-reses the game, and it puts them on the store. I have a feeling Sony just doesn't want to go through the process of adding more games to their store.
Well, when it puts it on the store, because that's the common misconception. Even my wife was talking to me about that. My wife's like, so you can buy an Xbox game and put it in your Xbox Series X and it'll work? I go, there's a good chance.
Yeah, there's a good chance. If it's in the store, it's guaranteed your disc will work.
Okay, well, so you know? Johnny put it in chat. My PS3 digital library is more what I'm sad about. Play your PS3.
No, but fuck that. They're so bulky. Like, so you expect Johnny to have his all that shit out, like his PS3, PS4, PS5 out.
No, you play your PS3 for the 20 minutes, then you get bored and realize the game is old as hell, and you stop playing it and put it away and play your PS5 and play your new games.
Yeah, but when you see, especially what I think bothers a lot of like PlayStation fans, me included, is you see what Xbox is able to do, and you just look at Sony
because,
like, why don't
they
you do
got
that?
Their ass kicked by PS4, so they had to do it.
Yeah, but it's a good
selling
point.
Who's going to win the console war right now, as it stands right now? PS5 or Series X?
Right. Well, without knowing price, based on hype, it's probably going to be PlayStation. But
so why does Sony have to make their old shit work on their new thing?
Just to make the consumer happy, because I feel like there's enough consumers.
They're
going to
buy it anyways.
Potentially, yeah,
are gonna buy it.
We don't quite know if they're gonna buy it, but yeah, there's a high chance they're gonna buy it anyways. But in terms of just adding,
if you want to play Ratchet and Clank, you want to play Spider-Man, you want to play Horizon Forbidden West, these games that they showed, you have to buy that system.
Yeah,
Microsoft says you don't have to buy that system, and because you don't have to buy that system, you can go play the stupid game from 2002. And it's going to put it in their thing, and it's going to work, and you're going to get bored in an hour and a half or whatever, and you're going to stop playing it, and you're going to play the new stuff. Sony doesn't care about that because they're focusing on their new stuff.
Yeah, which is totally valid, but I can still be bothered by, like, shit, I wish it was backwards compatible with it. But at the same time, like, I have my PS2. I can still hook it up. I have my PS3. I can still hook it up. It's just, when the other side's doing that, it kind of frustrates you, especially I'm more inclined to buy a PlayStation this holiday than a Series X, but Sony's not doing themselves any favor anytime they give Microsoft a win, like give them something to win.
The biggest problem I have with this is that Ubisoft said it and Sony didn't.
That's where I wanted to get to, because a lot of people were holding out hope, but we're 2 months away. If it was happening, they would have said it, because there's no other platform for them to say, like, your PS1 and PS2 and PS3 games work. And here's the price. You don't put that in the same announcement. You get that shit out of the way at the beginning. So I feel like people need to stop holding out hope for it, because they clearly don't give a shit about it. So we need to, like, move on past this. But I wish they would just come out and say it.
They don't care to the point where, like, this leaked and it's all over the internet, or it didn't leak. It was publicly posted on one of their forum. And Sony's just like, whatever.
And that's a problem, I think, is because they just don't care enough.
Think it's because their data shows that the damn players don't do it.
No, but there's enough talk about it that I feel like they would have to address it. Just like they still can't, like, correctly phrase the PS4 backwards compatibility. Like, every time they release a statement, it gets a little bit more confusing on, like, what's going to work and what's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Like, it just seems like their messaging is just so off with the console, like, specifically when it comes to the backwards compatibility. Like, they can put together a really cool trailer that shows, like, the DualSense controller in sand and then the sand vibrating. But you tell them, like, give me two sentences that explain backwards compatibility, and they're like, ah, shit, I can't. Like, mm-hmm. That's what's frustrating, is just, like, their messaging is so bad right now, and then it just lets people run wild on just, like, speculation. Like, oh, why did they show Dead Space during the GDC thing running? Why did they show the PS3 version of Dead Space running at the GDC conference for the PS5? And it's like, I don't fucking know. Mm-hmm. Like, no one knows.
But it's because I just think that they're focused on their new stuff. Like, that they want to give you reasons to buy a PS5. And I'm sorry, the ability to play PS3 games is not a reason to buy a PS5.
Yeah, it's definitely not. Though I wish they would at least do something with PS Now. In terms of, like,
we've beat that horse till it's dead.
Yeah,
and flipped it over and did it again. And they need to have some type of competition for Game Pass. I'm not saying they need to have a Game Pass equivalent, but they need to have some type of competition for Game Pass. And PS Now is not it.
Not in its current state. Like, they would have to do something with it. I think I was going to get PS Now, and I was like, oh, I want to play all the Resistance games, and I think they only had the third one. And I'm just like,
it could cost something, it could go really far back, but they need to come out and say all first party titles available on PS Now forever.
That would get me to subscribe to PS Now, like, in a heartbeat. Probably only for a month so I can get through all the games that I want to get to that are first party, but, like, it would get me in the door.
But stuff is coming and going from PS Now, just like stuff is coming and going from Games Pass, but it's not Xbox Studio games that are coming and going from Games Pass. They're there, they're going to live there, and they're always going to be there. You don't have to worry about that. Sony is like, oh, you can play Spider-Man for 2 months.
Yeah. Even though it's $20 and will probably be a PS Plus game down the road, but yeah, it's insane to me how that's running. But let's continue the Sony news, because we beat this horse to death. Sony had a financial report that released. There was two things in there that people were interested in. Some of it was, like, mildly interesting. First one I'll mention, I'm going to flip this on Dave. Sony is apparently going to explore releasing more first-party titles on PC. The reasoning behind this is just to, like, grow the base and entice people to come to the PlayStation brand, which totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. Horizon Zero Dawn was number one on Steam for quite a bit of time, for how fast the Steam, like, top sellers moves. And if they release more first-party games like that, there's a chance someone is going to play Horizon Zero Dawn for the first time on PC and go, shit, I kind of want to play the sequel, and the only way to play it is going to be on a PS5. So it makes sense.
We think.
I don't know if you have... In theory. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you have any extra opinion on it, they're not talking about, like, releasing on launch dates, you know? They're talking about, like, releasing just IPs
What would it hurt for them to release Horizon Zero Dawn on Steam PS5? Ooh, okay.
Those are the only people that are upset by this, like, it seems. Like, I think it's great.
More money for Sony to make more, to possibly purchase more studios, which we'll talk about, and mm-hmm. Just to broaden their platform and introduce more people to their franchises. Like, I don't see where this harms anything. Like, we're getting to the point where more than likely the PS5 and the Series X are going to be the, if not the last, the second to last console to where you're going to probably just have an app, like a PlayStation app on your TV or your computer or your monitor, and you're going to play these games, you know, without a console. So why not just let them play wherever the hell they want to play? Like, I don't see what it's hurting. Like, Death Stranding is on PC now too, right?
Yeah, Death Stranding's on PC.
And it's done really well. Horizon's doing really well. Hell, like, if they release,
put
like,
these
the
gone.
If they release the Uncharted Legacy or Uncharted collection on Steam for like $25, I bet you that thing would be in the top 10 for 2-3 months.
Potentially, yeah. I think it would be a really smart move, especially like franchises that, you know, did surprisingly well that you want to turn into like a long-standing franchise, or you have a game coming out soon. You probably don't need to release like the Spider-Man games on PC because those will sell by themselves. But like Days Gone could probably benefit from being released on PC. It sold surprisingly well, but that mm-hmm. would probably do well. Ghosts did well, but that would probably do even better, you know, like if you put that on PC. Like, I see it as a no-lose situation for Sony. They'll piss off some fanboys, but those fanboys are they're fanboys. They're going to still buy everything that gets released by Sony anyways. I think it's good. As long as they don't lose exclusivity on launch, they're probably fine. Like, there should be no issue with that. If it comes out, like, a year or two later, like it did with Horizon, what's the harm?
But the number one competitor that Sony is worried about currently is Xbox. You're not going to get the Steam player. The PC Master Race person isn't playing on any console anyways.
Yeah.
So, and if he or she has the opportunity to play your game and to give you the $60, like, why do you care? Like, you know, Microsoft has doubled down on the console exclusive thing, which means that they have it on console and Sony doesn't. But it's still available on PC, and I don't really know if that's harmed Xbox at all in terms of it. You know, we've seen the Game Pass subscriptions like soar, numbers just soar, and them putting Gears on PC and Halo on PC has only just introduced more people to it.
Yeah, and like in the case for Sony, it might get someone to consider buying a new console. You know, maybe
I don't see it as a console selling thing. I just see it as I really enjoyed Horizon, and now the second one's out, and oh, it's coming to PC too. Cool, like, and I'm in here $60. Yeah, I mean. Yeah. I wouldn't have a problem with it being day and date with Steam.
I just don't think it will be day and date for Steam, or at least not anytime soon. But I can see that definitely down the road if we make it to a PS6. I could totally see that this being the thing. But I think by the time we get to PS6, we will live in that world where it's an app, you know?
Stadia on steroids. So.
Yeah, yeah. Stadia with games is Stadia on steroids, to be fair. And then the last bit in this financial report is Sony is still looking for studios to acquire to add to their first-party team. The exact quote is, in addition to improving personnel and work environment, in its own studios, Sony Interactive Entertainment continues to invest or acquire firms with abundant creativity and cutting-edge technologies to build up the worldwide studios. More corporate talk after that. My question, what studios are left, realistically?
I mean, I would have to left. Really, really look, you know, to see.
Like, off the top of your head, I feel like most studios we can associate already with an owner, you know, a big publisher. The only ones I can think of are, like, Remedy, mm-hmm. Which I think they signed some sort of deal with someone recently. Hello Games. The No Man's Sky team, who just released a game last week. Like, to me, there's not a lot of studios left. I wouldn't be against, though, because their first-party studios are so talented, they kind of do what Microsoft did, where they make new studios and just kind of, like, split, you know, current teams in terms of... like Naughty Dog has so many, I think they have like 3 creative directors. Like, if they wanted to like separate one of that creative director and be like, hey, build a team and then have another studio, that wouldn't be too crazy. I think Bungie's done with getting close to big publishers. So I don't think Bungie's the only other like AAA developer I can think of, but I think they're kind of done working
how,
with big publishers.
Okay. All right. How crazy does it sound for them to try to buy somebody like Capcom?
That would... So I was also thinking of like, you know, like what if they bought Sega Atlas? Mm-hmm. You know, Capcom would make sense in terms of the Street Fighter brand, Mega Man, Resident Evil. That would be huge. I don't know how expensive that would be just because of the Resident Evil franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's, I feel like that would actually be a pretty like good get for them, especially if, you know, Warner Brothers ends up selling NetherRealm and, you know, all their studios to like Microsoft or something.
Well, and Sony's had a good relationship with Capcom too, with some of the Street Fighter stuff that they just did, to where they've, mm-hmm. you know, given them their creative freedom, and they, maybe now if they give them their bankroll, like maybe you could see something potentially, you know, like the older, they could help them revitalize the older stuff and give them the bankroll they need to make the Street Fighter the competitive esport that they really, really want it to be. Or I could see like a studio that's maybe had some success with Nintendo. That's, you know, like maybe only been making stuff for Nintendo because maybe they don't have the payroll. And I don't know who that is. You know, I kind of like quickly have been typing like 2019's best selling games, and that's where Resident Evil showed up. So that's where FIFA or Capcom showed up. But like, you know, could with some
is
of the
Capcom too big? Because Capcom, I just looked up, there are like 12 studios that are owned by Capcom. Or do you think it would be one of those ones you buy Capcom for the IP and you pick and choose the studios that you want from that?
I mean, it could be. Or you go to Capcom and say, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars for this team, and this team.
Yeah, which I think is what AT&T is ultimately going to have to do with the Warner Brothers studios in terms of if they really want to sell. I think it's going to end up becoming a piecemeal, like, bidding war.
Yeah, or, you know, like, as crazy as it sounds, like, and again, this is just out of left field, like, what if Sony went to EA and said, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars for BioWare?
I could see that for, like, BioWare proper. Also, it probably wouldn't be a too bad of a purchase, because you wouldn't be getting any studios with it, as Konami.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just IP buy from Konami, because I don't know what studios they still have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they have... Well, I guess the baseball game won't be exclusive next year, but, you know, they can, like, revive Fez and have an exclusive soccer game if they wanted. They can get Metal Gear Solid, which has always just been associated with them. They can get the Silent Hill games. The only thing is you're not going to get studios with
that.
They
buy the Metal Gear IP, and then they get...
Give it to Kojima. Wouldn't that be so great? And just let him do what he wants.
What if they buy Kojima Studio?
That I was thinking that as well. That would probably be a good get.
If he lets him. I mean,
yes, if he lets him, and it would probably be a good get for the fans. I don't know if that would be the best use of money, because I mean, I like Death Stranding.
Yeah, we've always heard about, like, you know, Quantic Dream. You know, obviously they're pretty much off the table, kind of off the table at this point because of some of the stuff they've been doing. Or the Octodad and Bugsnatch team.
Young Horses.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, that wouldn't carry as much clout, but again, I would be really curious to see, like, what they could do with, you know, like, before they have to pitch an idea to Sony of, like, hey, well, this is what I want our game to be, and Sony's like, okay, here's some money, versus them sitting at the table with Sony going, hey, we would love to do this, 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 or this, and then Sony going, okay, you can go with that, and here's our payroll. Like, something like that is always fascinating, so.
Yeah, because I don't think they're going to end up getting the Warframe devs, because Tencent bought that private negotiation rights with them a month ago, and we haven't heard anything from that. So I'm assuming that probably means that they closed in on the deal. So, yeah, there's still a bunch of studios that they can buy. There's a bunch of IPs they can buy as well.
I could see 2K trying to peel a couple things off, too, you know, at a certain point, if it's enough money, you know.
Gearbox is technically independent, but I don't think Sony would get in bed with Gearbox,
right?
If they wanted to just buy Gearbox for Borderlands, there's still a bunch of studios, but it was definitely one of those things where every studio I wanted them to buy were already like kind of acquired by someone else, so they would have to like go for it. Like Square would probably never get rid of any of their things, and they would cost too much money, so like Square would be out of the thing.
Yeah, you look at it. I mean, there's. You know, there's Sony, there's Microsoft, there's Activision, there's Square, there's Ubisoft, you know, and there's EA. And you start branching off what games those make, and you start going down the list. Like, you're getting into the, you know, even if you start looking at, like, the top 50 games of selling of all time, like, as many of those that are attached to those publishers that I just mentioned, like, it's pretty significant. I would say that's probably over 80%, 90% of them already attached to major developers.
Yeah, and I don't see them buying, like, indie studios too much. You know, like, Hello Games, I feel like, would be as indie as they get, just because of No Man's Sky. But, like, yeah, I don't really see anyone else. Like, I feel like Remedy is that next studio that everyone's probably looking at in terms of like Sony, Microsoft, in terms of like, as soon as Remedy says we're available, I feel like that would be like an instant purchase for like,
I don't even think it's a matter of saying you're available. I don't think we knew Insomniac was up for sale.
True. But I feel like offers have already had been given to Remedy based on like, they worked with Microsoft for like a couple exclusives. They came out of that and started to work with everybody. I feel like there would have been an offer on the table for them already. So I think it's almost a matter of like, how independent do they want to be, or how long do they want to be independent before a publisher ends up purchasing them?
I also think it would be something we would hear about a studio that they're purchasing, and then a couple months later we'd hear about the game, and then maybe that would be why you saw that they purchased the studio, because they were enamored enough with the game that they're like, you know what, we want this. And I think that the way of exclusivity, of trying to buy console exclusivity now, is so frowned upon amongst the gaming community, where it's just better to buy the studio.
Yeah. It's crazy though. Like, if you would have told me like 10 years ago, I was like excited for like publishers to buy more independent studios, I would have been like, hell no. But like, I just want studios to have money and some sort of job security. So then I'm just like all for it.
Buy the Fall Guy studio. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Mediatonic, they apparently make a killing off mobile games. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't know
that's
that.
That's what Fall Guys is.
Basically. But like, I didn't know how much money they actually make off some of their other games.
It would be
like,
interesting.
Oh,
like,
God.
All these studios that Devolver Digital has partnerships with, they don't own.
No, none of them.
So they're just a publisher. So like, anything that's been, you know, like got a Devolver Digital name on it that's been successful could have the potential to be purchased by them.
Yeah.
It would also depend on how well Housemarque's game does. Like, that could be, you know, Housemarque could be a studio as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about Housemarque. There would have been one of those independent developers a couple years ago. I thought Sony would have jumped on, but they didn't.
Give them, you know, again, with Housemarque, give them the money to maybe have two teams. And, okay, here, go with your new ambitions, what you want to do. And this other team, go back and do your bread and butter twin stick shooters that people love. You know?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Sony proper, Sony corporate, they've been trying to buy all the anime distributors. They own a chunk of Funimation, and I believe they're trying to buy Crunchyroll from Warner Brothers or AT&T. I wouldn't be surprised if Sony actually does pull off buying a Crunchyroll, and then you see them pick off some of those developers that work on the games associated with those animes, just so they can have like a full anime division, because they want to be like the king of anime right now. And those anime games have to sell because they come out so often and the quality never seems that great for a lot of them, but they still come out with sequels. So I that's also a potential, though I don't know any studios that like specialize in anime names. I don't know their names that well, but there are a bunch of things they could do there if they want synergy. But that's it for news. If anyone has ideas on who they want Sony to buy, let us know. But that was it that I could find for news.
All right, so we're going to jump into playing and watching. I'll go first. My playing is pretty much next to nothing. I've had one day off since we recorded. I ended up on one of my days off getting a bunch of overtime with work. And I also just had a rough week in general. It's public knowledge, but a lot of my, you know, our company had a huge, massive layoffs, and it kind of affected me. It didn't affect me directly, but it affected me like emotionally. I lost some friends and some close people that I worked with for years. No longer work for the company anymore. I'm okay, thankfully. It didn't impact me, but there was a point in time where I thought it could impact me, and then I thought the second stone could impact me as well, and both of them somehow missed. So. That did mess with me a little bit on top of just working a lot, and adjusting to life with Zoe not being home, my daughter not being home, and my son kind of doing his school, and then my youngest like kind of trying to get him ready for virtual kindergarten, however the hell that's going to work.
What? He's putting Nick Jr. on. Is Nick Jr. still exist?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think I sat down, even like one of our supporters, he's a friend of mine, Randy, messaged me like, dude, you haven't played games in like 10 days. Are you okay? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I wasn't on the PlayStation in 10 days. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, so but, you know, I've definitely had some weird stuff happening over the last week or so. But overall, I'm fine. And a lot of things are that had been weighing on me have started to lessen. And so that should help with some things. But then I just really haven't been super motivated to play games. Like, I go through those spats like we've always talked about. And so I was off on Saturday, and that's when help me with his name because I'm going to mess it up even though I wrote it down and didn't bring it down with me. Passed away Saturday morning, Friday night, Saturday morning.
Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, Chadwick Boseman. My wife and I woke up to that, and so we were reading some of that stuff, and she really got the itch to watch some movies that he was in. So we watched Avengers, or Captain America Civil War, and we watched Black Panther, and then we watched so ABC did something really cool Sunday night where they aired Black Panther commercial free, which they own, so it's not that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and then they did Roberts did like an hour tribute to him, which is really cool. So like we watched a lot of that. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, like Lute Olson passing away, the head coach of Arizona, you know, and the head coach of Georgetown, like those were, you know, his name's escaping me, even I said it earlier. Like there's
Thompson.
There's been so much changeover that's happened, and hearing about these things, there's two significant figures that I pay attention to. A local Detroit sports broadcaster passed away a month ago from colon cancer. And, you know, and Boswick.
Boswick.
Yeah. I'm terrible with the name. I'm sorry. So.
Yeah. I know you've always been pretty bad with names.
Yeah. You know, he passed away as well. And they're both like close to like my age, you know, and you know, he was 43 years old and he had colon cancer and he'd had it for 4 years.
And you never knew because he was working hard as hell.
Yeah. So like that's just kind of and, you know, so he got it like 2 years older than I am now is when he first got it, and they're, you know, like so it's just crazy. So if you're up there in age, like, not that I want to like tell you what to do, but like go to your doctor and listen to your doctor. If they tell you to take a test, like take the test. You know, please get tested for the things that you need to be tested for, so that stuff like that doesn't happen. Like, I don't, you know, want people to be, you know, fatherless or motherless, or, you know, the impact that, you know, the Black Panther movie had on society as a whole was just fascinating. And he, you know, the stuff that he did in Jackie Robinson as well, or in 42, if you haven't seen that, like, he was great. And then he was like just barely finished this Netflix thing that isn't even out yet. So it's just crazy. But so please just do that and watch that. And then I told this to Michael on stream and he shook his head, so when he was streaming, so I don't know how he's going to react to this. And Angela might get a little defensive, but Angela got this bug up her butt that she wanted us to watch Big Bang Theory. And I've seen bits and pieces of it, you know, clips here or there, or, you know, but caught it, you know, channel surfing back and forth. So we went all the way back, which, by the way, this is only on HBO Max.
Yeah.
So we went all the way back to the beginning, and it's a 25 minute show that I laugh every couple minutes. It has some funny moments to it as well. I don't feel like I have any like direct relation to the characters or anything like that. I think it's like over the top, but there are times that it's funny. I love seeing him interact with the girl that lives across the hall from him. Like that's
Penny.
You know, Penny, like that's fascinating. Yeah. The stories of how those things are working and just seeing the, you know, I'd never seen any of it. I think we're maybe like 8 or 9 episodes in. So it'll just be just filler. So
that was a show. I remember being okay with it. I just kind of equate it to like a bag of chips, to where like it's just, you're just eating it and you're consuming it, but you're not really like getting emotionally attached to it. But it was one of those shows where I thought there was like some clever writing in the first season, despite like it's like nerd stereotype stuff just being jammed down your throat. And I felt like, as the show progressed, I think I got into like the third season before I just was like, okay, I can't watch this anymore because it's just getting annoying. And I definitely felt like the first season or two, there was definitely jokes in it to where like, hey, that is a really smart, clever joke. And then it devolved into, instead of telling jokes that are funny and clever, it turned into, let's just make fun out of these people. And then that's when I kind of like fell off. So I don't know if you'll notice that if you even get that far, because I think there's a shit ton of episodes.
Yeah,
I got into like season three and then bounced out, which still like means I watched like 40 episodes.
Like we watched like, you know, like one or two episodes like eating dinner. You know, it's just kind of like it's on while we're eating. And, you know, there's funny parts to it. It's just like I'm still watching Bless This Mess because I just want to see what other stupid crap happens in that show on Hulu. And I'm almost done with it and I'll move on. All the DC fandom stuff kind of intrigued my interest again. And I started catching up on Supergirl again. So I was watching a couple episodes of Supergirl. I just finished where she was fighting Red Daughter. So like where they introduce like Lex Luthor to the world and seeing how that's going to, you know, like that's going to progress farther. I do have a desire to like kind of catch back up on Flash and Arrow, but that feels like such a like a commitment and an effort right now. But I did also realize that I hadn't finished Arkham Knight. So like I would probably think I would want to try to, you know, I did enjoy Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. So I have Arkham Knight. I got it like super cheap, like on some like price mistake or something like that. I think I have like the only problem is if I download that thing, I think I have to download like 14 other packs. Just like,
yeah I don't think it really replaces packs or patches.
Yeah, so no. But I mean that might be something I could, you know, play an hour or two a night and stream, you know, just to kind of go through and don't have to worry about people like that game's old enough that I don't have to worry about like spoiling anything for anybody.
So
for me that's pretty much it for playing and watching.
I'm still pushing playing Ghost of Tsushima. Like, I keep saying, like, I'm going to play it, and then I just, like, I don't know, maybe just mentally right now, because me going back to work, I just can't get into an open world game, and I'm always like this with open world games, where I just don't want to start them, because they're very time consuming, and this game, if I do really get into it, will consume my time, and my time's kind of, like, limited in terms of, like, what I can do, and all that stuff. So... haven't touched that yet. Sorry, guys. Anyone that wants to know my opinions on the game. But I just ended up playing a bunch of games this past week, but not a lot of time per game. So let me go through my list. The Last Campfire, which just came out on like Switch, PS4, PC, and Xbox, I think. That came out. That is a new game from Hello Games, No Man's Sky, Joe Danger, or the previous games. It's a puzzle exploration game. You play as like this cute little character in a robe that almost looks like a chibi version of like the character from Journey in terms of like the design. I know there's like a specific name for like the type of robe they're wearing, but I don't know it off the top of my head. And I tried to Google it and I couldn't figure out like what words to put into Google to give me the exact name. But I'm playing that. It's really cute. It's a like puzzle exploration game. I actually didn't know what I was getting into, but I had like an Epic Game Store coupon for $10 and the game's $15. So I'm like, you know, let me put it there. So I didn't know what I was getting into, but it's like a really like whimsical like puzzle game. You basically, it seems like you get lost and you start to find other people similar to you that also were lost, and it seems like they have died or they've like fossilized, and you're trying to find their flame, which I'm assuming is their spirit, and bring that back to them so then they can be guided into like the afterlife by someone. So it's kind of like one of those dark games that'll probably make me cry at a certain point. So I'm playing that. I didn't get super far into it. Some of the puzzles were really hard early going. But they're mostly environmental puzzles where you're just moving different pieces around to like get from point A to point B. And then there's also simpler puzzles where it's like you find an object and you have to then figure out, okay, what can this object help me with? Like I found a worm, and then later on in a game I find a fisherman who's fishing. You give him the worm and, you know, progress opens up that way. And there's like stuff in the water you're trying to get, so you're like, okay, if I give the worm to the fisherman, maybe the fisherman will give me the fishing pole, and then you just like link everything together like that.
Right, yeah, for sure.
So probably will continue that. I don't think it's a really long game, which I'm really into right now. Like really short games are kind of my thing. And then
let me ask you though, hearing a little bit of chatter on our Facebook group and some of this talk that's in our Discord, does the fact that Ghost of Tsushima is a 30 to 40 hour game, is that kind of what's scaring you from it right now too?
Yes, because it sounds like it is even longer than that if you want to get everything. In open world games, I tend to want to get everything. I like clearing it. And it sounds like the platinum's attainable too, which then might make me keep going with that. But yeah,
is it too close to Last of Us?
Yes, and that is a problem I had with the last Last of Us. When that first came out, I also went through a weird spell where I finished The Last of Us, and the whatever you say about the story, whatever, but like the quality of that game, of the first Last of Us, kind of ruined me on any other games kind of in that genre for a while, because I knew the quality bar wasn't going to be as high in terms of like production value, acting, character design, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. Production level was so high on The Last of Us 1 that I couldn't play the Tomb Raider game that was also out that year, because I was just like, I can't, this doesn't work. And I feel like it's the same thing with The Last of Us Part 2, where the quality of the production was so high that anytime I saw like footage of Ghost of Tsushima that shows that it may be not, is story-wise, it might be pretty good, but like the production quality might not quite be at the Naughty Dog level, definitely has made me just kind of like just want to play a bunch of indie games that are not trying to go for like storytelling, or not necessarily storytelling, but like production level of The Last of Us, if that makes any sort of sense. But yeah, I'm weird like that, where I get broken if I play a really good game, or what I think is a really good game. It's hard to find a follow-up, that especially a follow-up that wants 30 to 40 hours of your time.
Yeah, for sure. So,
yeah. Another game that also deals with death, Spiritfarer, is a game. It's out on all the platforms. It's on Game Pass, so I'm playing it on PC. This one is like a management game. You play a character who has a boat, and you are basically tasked with picking up passengers and kind of taking care of like unfinished business for them, or like their last requests before you pass them on to death. So you're basically like working them through purgatory. It's got a really beautiful, like colorful art style. It's also very like whimsical with it, with like everything that it does. But for the most part, you're just managing the ship, adding different things to your ship, like kitchens, bedrooms, to make like the lives of your passengers like better before you pass them on. So it was like a happy accident that I ended up picking up both of these games, Campfire and this, at the same time, because they kind of deal with the same, you know, like look at death in their own ways, that for some reason it struck me as similar as I wrote down my notes for this for this episode. I was like, oh shit, I'm playing two games that are dealing with death.
You take notes?
I take notes, yeah. They're very basic notes, just so I remember the name of the game, with like three bullet points each. So that's Spiritfarer. It's out on Game Pass, so of course I picked it up. There's a lot of Game Pass games that I downloaded the last couple weeks. And then not on Game Pass, Manifold Garden. This is a game that me and Dave have probably seen so many times at E3s or PSXs or whatever. This is another puzzle game, but this one has like an M.C. Escher design or like art aesthetic. And it's like a puzzle, like platformer kind of type of thing, but you can like change the world in terms of like flipping the walls upside down or moving things just right so you can like solve the puzzles. Doing a bad job explaining it, but once you see what Manifold Garden looks like, you'll probably be like, oh, I remember that game from like 4 years ago, because it's been around for a while. I'm playing that. I'm only like maybe 40 minutes into it. It's one of those games where maybe mentally I'm just not there right now, because I'm playing some dark and whimsical games, to where it's making me feel really stupid as I'm trying to like get through these puzzles, and I'm having fun with it, but I'm definitely having to think a lot so far in the early going that I'm just like, okay, let me take my time with it, see if I can progress room to room, but not play in like super long bursts, because I don't think the game is super, super long, but it's definitely one of those ones where I know I'm taking way longer to solve the puzzles than I should be. So it's definitely been one of those like slow burns for me, to where it's like when I'm in the puzzle mood, I might hop on and see how far I can progress. And then the last game is Mixolumia. This is a game on PC, on itch.io. So it's like you buy directly from the developer. This is just a match 3 game. I streamed it yesterday on Twitch. I kind of didn't know this game existed until someone retweeted a Twitter thread from earlier this year. And the developer basically had an idea for a game that he didn't know exactly it was going to be a game. But then he workshopped it with his followers, and it then turned into like a full-blown puzzle game that's like really addictive. Like, I'm a huge Tetris and Lumines fan, so I love my match 3 games, or my matching puzzle games. So I picked this up. It has everything I look for in a puzzle game. It has like some decent visual effects while still maintaining like a very simplistic visual art style. And the music's pretty good, though there's only like 3 songs in the game. So after like playing a game for like 4 hours over a couple days, I ended up just using a soundtrack from Shatter and Earth Knight to go along with it. But it's really cool, and it's really easy to like get different like color palettes to the game. Like, people just have released different color palettes that match other games to it. So I have like 40 or 50 different like color palettes that I swap onto the game based on how I'm feeling. It's really cool. It's like $10 on itch.io. It's only on PC, but it was made by one person earlier this year, so maybe if it takes off, it can pop up on other platforms, because I really would love to see it on like the Switch, where I play Tetris and Lumines the most. So that would be it for playing. Watching the White Sox still. They're still doing really, really well. MasterChef Australia, we're almost done. We're like at episode 56, because MasterChef Australia is like 60 episodes a season. So we're watching that. We're hopefully don't get spoiled on it, but I don't think we know anyone who's watching MasterChef Australia. So hoping to finish that up this week. Like Dave, I was also thinking of rewatching some or catching up with some DC CW shows. Because I need kind of shows to put on in the background at work while I'm like working on like, you know, like client devices. So I was thinking of picking up The Flash again, just to have in the background, because I enjoy The Flash, but it's not a show that I need to pay attention to too much. It's just something in the background. So I was thinking of like, I was making a list of shows to watch when I go back to work, and like The Flash is on there, Smallville's on there, just because it's been a while since I've watched Smallville. Though that might be a show I can't watch without thinking about like one of the characters being the leader of a weird cult in real life. So that might be a weird rewatch, because I think she's still on trial for the horrible thing she did. So I'm kind of wondering if I can sit through Smallville and separate the real world from it, you know, right now. But that is pretty much it for me. I'm sure I'm missing something, but I at least wrote down all the games I'm playing, and then these games will probably keep me entertained for a little bit longer. My friends did convince me to buy Dying Light, so I'll probably jump on that eventually, though I'm so bad at playdates. Like, I apologize to my friends every time, like, you should get this game. They're like, this game is awesome, when are we going to play it? And I'm like, I don't know. And then I just disappear.
Yeah, so I'm bad too, because I got the Xbox, and Johnny's a boy, has an Xbox, and he's like, God, like, let's play. And I'm like, I don't want to play anything right now. Like,
you know, yeah, that's my problem, is like, and our times are different. Like, they like this.
He's constantly messaging me, like, hey, what are we going to play? And I'm like, next week? And then next week, come, what are we going to play? Tomorrow?
I'm also really bad. I have notifications turned off on my systems. So I always feel bad when I finish playing a game, and then I look and I have like 6 or 7 messages, and I'm like, oh no. I missed all these invites. So that is it for me. I don't know what my plans are for video games next week.
Yeah. So. All right. We're going to jump in some of our questions really quick. So you can use you can send us questions in the Facebook group, Twitter, Discord, all that stuff. Hashtag Ask Digital Days. There are multiple places that you can post those questions. So Stefan on the Facebook writes, I am buying a PS5 day one. Since I'm on the year of the backlog, should I wait until the PS5 version of Last of Us 2 and Ghost get released to buy them? Is it taking all my willpower not to get them now? I don't know if they're actually going to be better versions on PS5.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I feel like if there were, we would know by now. It depends. If you held out this long, we're in September.
If you haven't been spoiled on Last of Us enough to annoy you, maybe
I would
play that right away. Wait longer.
Get rid of that.
Well, I'm saying if he somehow has been able to avoid it this long, then he might be okay. But yeah, I would say between the two, I would put Last of Us in a much higher priority, depending on how much you care about that story, because there are things that happen in that story that if somebody spoiled them, that would bother me.
Yes. And Ghost, I hear the story's okay. It's good. But I don't think anyone's out there trying to spoil that story. I would say if you go until the holidays without The Last of Us being spoiled, maybe pick that up as soon as you can.
I could definitely see that being like $40 on Black Friday, though. $35, $40.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, he's in the UK, right? So he would probably... Was it Boxing Day? Or I think that's after Christmas.
That's
I don't know. Oh, that's Canada? I'm pretty sure UK has Boxing Day as well. Yeah, so I don't know if there's going to be special versions of these games. I feel like we would have already heard about that. And I don't know when you would announce that. You know, you're not going to do that with... The next announcement from PlayStation should be the price and release date. I don't think it will be...
Last of Us 2, shinier and newer, PS5.
Yeah. Yeah. And even then, I think the Last of Us is supposed to run at the frame rate. It was picked because it's very cinematic, so I don't think you're going to get a higher frame rate version of The Last of Us. In terms of, because I've seen videos of people like, oh, we put the Last of Us frame rate to 60 frames, and it looks fucking weird, because it wasn't meant for 60 frames. So, Last of Us should probably be a priority. Ghost might benefit from a next-gen version a little bit, but I don't think it's that big a deal either, because that game runs really well as well. Unless you don't have a Pro. If you just have a PS4, hold out till next gen. But if you have a Pro, display those right away.
I don't have a Pro, and Last of Us was great.
I have both, a regular and a Pro, and I notice the difference in like stuff because I have both.
It's because you have both.
I know, that's the thing. Yeah, yeah.
It's like putting an LG TV next to like a, you know, a TCL. Like, oh wow, yeah. That one looks really bad.
Yeah. True. But still, I'm just saying. Like, if you have a regular PS4, just wait till the PS5. If you don't, if you have a Pro, there's probably not going to be a difference.
You're terrible. All right. Randy asks, question for Michael and Dave. I don't know who else the question would be for.
he put it in a group, so.
Yeah. You talked about growing DDG and getting the most enjoyment from interacting with the community. But do you have an end game in your plans? Are you hoping to turn DDG from a hobby to a career and become the next IGN? I wish. What are the long-term goals for DDG? Thanks. I don't know. Go ahead, Michael.
I was thinking about this. I think I just want to grow the community, but also at the same time, there's a cap where I would want to see the community's numbers get to. And I wouldn't want to go over the cap because...
Yeah. I never want to open our Discord and be like, holy crap, like, what is going
on? I like that, you know, when we stream on Twitch, you know, we'll have a few people there. And it's cool, everyone's chill, because anytime I go into someone's, like, Twitch channel and they have over 1,000 people watching, the Twitch chat is nightmare fuel fire. Yeah. You know, like, there's definitely, like, I do want to see us grow and get bigger. But there's also, like... the scariness of like how big, because once you know, every website after where they hit a certain point will have a certain amount of like haters and detractors that definitely will make life a living hell little bit.
I mean, and right now it's the two of us, and I think that with what we're doing, there definitely is a cap to what we're doing. We're not close to that at all. So I would love to see, you know, certain things grow better to where I would love to have somebody come to us and say, hey, we've got a cool opportunity for you guys that we'd love for you to do. Like that would be kind of like the, you know, you've made it point a little bit for me. Like we, there's a lot of things that I feel like, wow, like, you know, we've hit a couple thresholds, and or when I reach out to somebody, I don't get a door slammed in my face. So like, you know, like that's a good point. And for us to be there in less than a year, I really wasn't expecting. There are still some companies that shut their doors in our faces, and I would love to have enough clout.
They don't even open them.
Yeah. I would love to have enough clout and, you know, recognizability to be like, hey, like this is, you know, like, oh, I, we know who you are, like, or somebody to seek our email out or seek out a way to contact us. I guess that would be a thing. There is a lot of behind the scenes numbers that Michael and I see on a weekly and a daily basis. And those numbers are continuing to increase. So they're not going down. Sometimes,
yes, that, yes, which is good.
sometimes they stay the same, but then, you know, they're slowly inclining. We passed another milestone that him and I are happy about within the last week or so. But the priorities are, you know, just growing the community. I guess if you really want to know what my end game is that I want to give us more of a footprint in the PC and the Xbox world. In terms,
we want to cover everything, you know, and that's a definite goal.
Yeah. So, and growing that aspect of side of the community is a goal. If you really ask me, would I love to get enough money from Twitch and Patreon and, you know, monetizing YouTube or whatever we're doing, or somehow monetize the podcast itself to where maybe I don't have to work, you know, full time? Like, that would be fantastic. Do I think that I would ever in the next 5 to 10 years be able to do this full time, that I'm not working and it's enough to support my family? No.
Yeah, that's same thing with me in terms of, like, I would love to be able to knock my current work to part-time. But the reason I would say that is because of stability. You know, like, I have a lot of stream friends, or friends that do streams, and they every month they have that part where all their primes expire. All their Prime subs expire, or their gifted subs expire, and then they don't know what they're going to do for money until, mm-hmm. like, people start resubscribing again. So I don't ever see us doing this full-time, just because there's a lot of instability. You know, if you just look at YouTube and how they're constantly dicking around with their monetization stuff, and talking to people that do YouTube channels and videos and hearing them panic of just, like, I don't know if I can make money on YouTube anymore. So yeah, there's definitely that. And then Dave doesn't want to sell dick pills. So, like, it really limits, like, what we can
say,
do advertising-wise.
You never said that was an option.
I'm just saying we can pursue it and then see what happens.
Based on my ratio of when I have children, I don't need those. So, but no, I mean, the ability for us to kind of just to do our own thing and how we want to do it, and to decide what we're covering and what we're not covering, is the coolest thing. That's why, like, the stuff that Michael's talking about with the instability of Twitch, the weirdness of YouTube, that's why, like, Patreon is so important to us, because that is you guys going directly to us and saying, we want to support you. There's not something that's popping up as a notification that says, hey, you're live. There's not something that's hitting your feed every week that says, hey, here's a new episode. All those things are great, and watching those numbers grow is humbling and fascinating at the same time, and to the point where I sometimes overanalyze them too much. But then for somebody to click on the Patreon page, read what we wrote, click on the donate thing, put your information in to be a monthly supporter, means so much, because it's not like, hey, we're streaming, like, and, you know, you're seeing somebody else follow, or you're seeing somebody else sub, and you're going to, like, hey, I want to do that. Like, Patreon, when you become a Patreon supporter for us, like, you're on purpose doing that. And that is love and appreciated that you're doing that. And I would love for that to be something that could continue to grow, and to tell you that we use those finances to reinvest into DDG. Like, it's, you know, regardless of what these prices of these consoles are going to be, like, we're going to be able to take a significant chunk out of both of us purchasing those consoles because of the community that we've grown and built here. And that's a huge stress relief, and for us to not be able to worry about it. And for me to get other things like this microphone or the mixer to help make it easier for us to produce content.
There was a point last month where you guys may have heard it, where my microphone seemed like it was broken, and we actually had the flexibility to where it's like, well, I could just buy a microphone.
And I think the only reason you haven't bought it yet is because of COVID, because of out of stock
It sold out and I fixed my microphone issue. But at least in that instance, it was just like, okay, I need a new microphone potentially. And with your guys' support, I could have bought a new microphone and you guys never would have known that I had a microphone break on me. Mm-hmm. Or we wouldn't have had been like, no show this week because Michael's microphone is broken.
Right.
And that allows us to do that and other things we can to improve the content here that we're hopefully you guys notice that there's improvements. So some of the stuff that we improve are so minor, you guys wouldn't know them, but it's stuff we improve for, you know, how we do things and the tools that we use to like produce the show.
The schedulers and investing into things that just to make our lives easier. Like the fact that my wife tomorrow morning can, you know, edit the show, be done before 11 or 11:30 and schedule it to post on Patreon, schedule it to post on Simplecast and then just walk away from it. Like she's done and she doesn't have to worry about it till the next week. And we pay for a service to that allows us to do that. And that funds and comes from you guys directly. Like you guys are paying that bill. You know, the first month or two, Michael is reaching into his pocket for certain things. Some of the video editing software that we have, you know, like we reach into our pockets for that. I have reached into my own pocket for certain things, but I look at them as long-term investments of even, you know, like not that I'm thinking it, but even if DDG doesn't continue in 5 years, like these are things that I would continue to use on a daily basis, to do things. But, you know, like the ultimate long-term thing would, yeah, like ideally in a perfect world would be to have enough, you know, income to substantially lessen our workloads.
Yeah, so we can be comfortable telling one Karen at work to go fuck themselves because we have a podcast and not have to worry about the consequences.
Yeah. So. All right, I think that is the show for this week. So thank you guys so much for hanging out, whether you're hanging out on Twitch or you're watching us on YouTube. Like, leave a thumbs up. Subscribe while you're there, please. Or those of you listening on all your podcast services, please just, if you're able to leave us a review,
something
written, like that's a huge way that you guys can help us expose us to more people. Just like we've always talked about liking the, sharing the show on Facebook, retweeting, maybe even retweeting with a comment on Twitter, like that all gets exposure to more eyes on us. There are still some people that I run across of that are like, oh, I know you're not doing that anymore. Like, yeah, well, I'm doing this. So like, how long have you been doing that for? Like, oh, almost a year now. Like, whoa. And, you know, like I'm still running into some of those people that, you know, that have reached out to me or that I randomly run into on a PSN party or something. So any of that exposure would be greatly appreciated. I can pretty much tease that September is going to be a cool month already. There's some stuff that we got in the works. So I'm pretty excited about that. So some more, you know, additional content.
It's Subtober in on Twitch all through the month of September, which is like 20% off.
September.
I misread that. Subtober. Yeah, whatever. It's they're gonna do a thing where it's like 20% off subs for Twitch. So if you're thinking of supporting us on Twitch, it's gonna be cheaper to do so in September.
Right.
So check that out.
Yeah, but little things, guys, like that always help. Like dropping in the Twitch chat saying hi, like, hey, what's going on? How you doing? Like that all help. Even if you're only there for like 5 minutes, you know, just drop in, you know, chat with us for a little bit, hang out and, you know, drop out and keep doing what you're doing. I understand everybody has got, you know, life and things and, you know, just, you know, the other things that if you really want to know, like just like I was thinking about this week, if there's other things that you really want to know of ways that you can help us, you could do something as simple as if some of you like leave your PC running, you know, while you're at home, or, you know, like if you can just open up a tab for Twitch and just leave it open on ours. And anytime that we go live, it just shows as a viewer like that always, you know, that helps. And then you can click on it when we're streaming or, you know, getting, you know, turning notifications on for the YouTube channel, turning notifications on for Twitch. So that you know when we're there. And like I said, even if you just want to pop in for a couple minutes and leave, like that, you know, that helps. There's little figures that Twitch keeps track of, like number of average viewers and number of active chatters at the same time. So like those are all things that help us get more, you know, more noticed and moved up stuff. But leaving a review and sharing the show is the biggest ways right now.
Yes.
Just getting more and more eyes on it. Like when the things that we've done, that it, like Michael got a lot of eyes on our show with the Tony Hawk Pro Skater interview that he had for the documentary I Am Superman. Some of the PS5 and the Ubisoft event stuff that we've done, and we've carefully and strategically tagged and been very timely with that. That's helped us, you know, grow more people. But the biggest way that we can grow is through you guys. So that is our show. So again, socials, you know, just social media stuff. You can follow the main show at Digital Days Pod. You can follow Michael at First MJC. You can follow myself at Good Dave Hunt. Join the Facebook group. Be part of the conversations. Have a bunch of fun in there. Discord channel as well. And then obviously patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming. So the $1 is the tip jar. $3 is Discord access, which is a separate private channel within our server. So you don't have to be a $3 Patreon subscriber to be in the Discord channel. There's just a separate private channel for Patreon supporters. 24-hour early access to the show for the $5 tier, so you get the show on Wednesday morning. It does work on, I know for a fact it works on Podcast Addict. I have not seen if it works on iTunes, but I have two separate feeds in my Podcast Addict for us, the one that posts on Thursday and the one that posts on Wednesday. So if you're worried about, I don't want to listen to it through a browser, depending on the app service you use, you won't have to. It'll just post on when you, because you get something emailed to you.
Get an RSS feed.
Yeah. And then $7 is a monthly bonus episode, which we'll be recording September's here pretty soon. Still looking for some topics and suggestions for the month of September. So otherwise, we're
going to... That should go live next week as we hopefully record that this week.
Yeah. So if you have anything that comes to mind, please let us know. And other than that, I hope everyone has a great week. Talk to you guys later.
See ya.